Okay, so let me remind you where we are. G is a semi-simple algebraic group over Q. K is contained in G, which is GR, is a maximal compact. Gamma in GQ is arithmetic. B is G mod K. X is D divided by gamma. We have a partial compactification, D bar Bailey-Borel, which was obtained by attaching to D all of the rational boundary components together with the Satake topology, which I didn't define. And then we divide this by gamma. And the result is the compactification, the Bailey-Borel compactification. This is a projective algebraic variety, and it's singular, but it can be divided into strata. Each stratum is itself a locally symmetric space for a Hermitian symmetric domain, and the closure of each stratum is itself the Bailey-Borel compactification of that stratum. Now, there's a resolution of singularities. Called the toroidal resolution. And I'm not going to describe how to construct it because it takes many hours, but it's described in a book by Ash, Mumford, Rappaport, and Tai. The book is called Non-Singular Toroidal Compactifications of Hermitian Symmetric, Hermitian Locally Symmetric Spaces. The main theorem in this book, which is that there exist non-singular toroidal compactifications of Hermitian symmetric, of Hermitian locally symmetric spaces, the main theorem is stated only in the title, as near as I can tell. But nevertheless, people agree that if you read the whole book, it's all there. You just have to put it all together. However, there are many toroidal compactifications, and they depend on a choice sigma. And so I just wanted to say the data involved in constructing a toroidal compactification, sigma, is the following. You look at so recall that there are boundary components of various dimensions. If you take a boundary component of smallest possible dimension, the boundary components are given by throwing away one of these dots, and then you have a normalizing parabolic subgroup, which is a product of a Hermitian factor times a linear factor. The Hermitian factor has a symmetric space which is Hermitian, and that is the boundary component. And the linear factor has a symmetric space which in general is a self-adjoint homogeneous cone in some vector space. If you take the parabolic with the smallest possible Hermitian factor, in other words, throw away that dot, then what you'll get is the Levy will break up into 1 times LPL, where this LPL has a Dinkin diagram, which is a straight line like that. The symmetric space for LPL is a self-adjoint homogeneous cone in some vector space. And in the case of the symplectic group, we saw that this was exactly the cone of positive definite symmetric matrices. And sigma is a choice of, okay, so we have associated to this a space LPL mod KPL, which is this homogeneous cone, and then we can divide this also by gamma PL. So you take gamma, intersect it with P, project it to LP, and project it to LPL. You get an arithmetic subgroup of this, and then we have this quotient. If I also divide by AP, then this is has a standard compactification. And the data here, sigma, is a choice of flat triangulation of the arithmetic quotient gamma PL mod LPL mod KPL AP of the cone LPL mod KPL. So I mentioned that there are these interesting flat triangulations of the cone of, or the arithmetic quotients of the cone of positive definite symmetric matrices. And, bar standard. So we get a compact space by taking the standard compactification, and these have a natural class of triangulations, which are in some sense flat, and they're given by decomposing the cone, or this partial compactification of the cone, into simplicial cones. And that data, which is, and you want to do that in a gamma PL in equivariant way. So that data, which is rather complicated, gives rise to one of these toroidal compactifications. So I just wanted to mention that's an extremely complicated collection of data. And but after you divided it by gamma, you'll get a triangulation of a stratified space, and the triangles, in some sense, correspond to divisors. The top dimensional simplices, in some sense, correspond to divisors in this resolution of singularities. So there's a collection of resolutions, but even to describe the data that you need to define them takes quite a long time, so I won't go into more detail. But I would like to mention that there's an application of these toroidal compactifications to automorphic forms. So let me recall that an automorphic vector bundle is a bundle on X, which is D mod gamma, which is given by representation of K. Let lambda map K to GLV be a finite dimensional representation of K on a complex vector space. Then you get a bundle E equals V cross over K with G. I'm going to give it around. G cross over K with V. We get a bundle. So this means these are equivalence classes of pairs, GV, where we say that GV is equivalent to GK lambda of K inverse V. Equivalence classes of pairs. This forms what's called a homogeneous vector bundle over G mod K, because G acts on this. G acts on E by G dot HV equals GHV. And so you can divide by gamma. E divided by gamma is a vector bundle over D mod gamma, which is X. This is called an automorphic vector bundle. So smooth sections I might call this E sub gamma. Smooth sections of E sub gamma are given by functions from G to V, which have two properties. First, they're invariant under gamma, and secondly, they have to transform under K the way this representation works. In other words, F of gamma GK equals lambda of K inverse F of G. So the smooth sections of of this vector bundle over X are exactly given by smooth functions from G to V, which satisfy this relation. And a section is holomorphic. If y of f equals 0 for all y in p minus. So let me explain what that means. The Lie algebra for G breaks up into k plus p under the Cartan involution. The choice of k gives you a Cartan involution, which has plus 1 and minus 1 eigenspaces. So G tensored C breaks up into KC plus PC. On PC, the Cartan evolution acts as minus 1, so that further decomposes into I and minus I eigenspaces. Plus I and minus I eigenspaces. Now, every element of GC acts on such functions because we have x plus iy acting on f is x of f plus iy of f. So every element of GC acts on the space of such functions since V was a complex vector space and by differentiation. And if the function is killed by the y's that are in p minus, then that exactly corresponds to holomorphic sections. So this is an old theorem of Borel. It's a beautiful way to say what holomorphic is in this language. Then Mumford proved that for any such homogeneous vector bundle, E or E gamma, and for any choice of toroidal resolution, X bar sigma, there's a canonical extension of E as a holomorphic vector bundle over the toroidal resolution. Every E gamma admits a canonical extension. Let's call it E sigma over X bar toroidal sigma. I forgot to say something else. Smooth sections of this vector bundle are holomorphic if they satisfy this, but you still don't have what people generally call an automorphic form. Automorphic form usually has a growth condition. So we say that a smooth section is an automorphic form if F has polynomial growth. So polynomial growth means that you put a Hermitian metric on V, and then you want to say that the norm of F of F of G is less than or equal to some constant, which is value greater than 0, norm of G to the n, for some c greater than 0, for some n greater or equal to 1, where norm of g is equal to I think it's the trace of g inverse times theta of g, where theta is the Cartan involution. Anyway, there's a growth condition on functions in order for them to be automorphic forms. And then Mumford's theorem is not only does this automorphic vector bundle extend over any toroidal resolution in a natural way, but if F is an automorphic form, in other words, a holomorphic section, so let me say it more clearly. Suppose F is a holomorphic section of E gamma, then F extends to a section of E sigma, in other words, of this extension over the toroidal resolution, if and only if F has polynomial growth. In other words, if and only if F is an automorphic form. So in other words, the sections of E sigma can be naturally identified with the space of holomorphic automorphic forms. And so that means you can, independent of sigma, yeah, it's amazing, right? But the sections, I mean, the extension of E depends on sigma. So you can analyze things like the dimension of the space of automorphic forms using things like Riemann-Roch theorem and so on these resolutions. Anyway, there are many applications of the toroidal resolutions, but I'm going to basically skip them now and go on. All that was supposed to have happened in the last lecture, I'm getting behind. Yes, this is in the notes. And it will be on the test also. So now the Borel-Serre compactification. So now I really do need to take G to be reductive because I'm going to need reductive groups for the boundary component. So let's say G is reductive, defined over Q. So there's a construction which Jim Arthur did at the beginning, and it's very standard to do it, and it's confusing the first time you see it, but everybody always does it. So I'll just recite the mantra, and you'll just have to live with it. You let Sg be the greatest Q split torus in the center of G. We look at its real part, real points, and we take the connected component of the identity, the topologically connected component of the identity of the real points. Sg of R plus is called Ag, is the identity component of the group of real points in this central torus. We also let 0g equal the intersection of the kernel of chi squared, where chi is an element of the rational characters. So we let chi run over the rational characters, the rational maps from g to gm. Jim intersected with the kernels of the chi's instead of the chi squares. The difference is only a finite group, but I really want to intersect with the kernels of the chi squares. It's just a finite difference. This is, again, a rationally defined algebraic group. This is a Q group. And the fact is that the real points, G of R, break up as a product of AG cross 0G of R. An exact product, no finite intersection between these at all. Just an exact product this way. So This gives you a way, in some sense, of splitting off the center and still having a rational algebraic group when you're finished. And now I want to let K be a maximal compact subgroup. And I write D equals G of R mod K AG. So this is also equal to 0 G of R mod K. So this is my symmetric space, D. If there's a central torus, I'm dividing by it, just as in the case of the cone, I divided by the homothetes. But it means that you can always restrict to cases where the AG is trivial and still study the same symmetric space as a quotient of a rationally defined algebraic group. So that's what I'm going to do from now on. I'm going to assume this AG is trivial. Now, it's a little messy. There could still be a real split torus. Some part of the center could still have a real split torus. It's not split over the rationals. So there can still be a linear factor in D, a Euclidean factor to D. But we can always reduce to the case that AG is trivial. And once again, for Shimura varieties and for representation theory, you definitely do not want to do this. But for the point, but just for exposition, it's a little easier if there's no AG floating around. Okay. Now the Borel Serre, and again we let gamma in GQ be arithmetic. Did I ever say this? Arithmetic subgroup, and X is D mod gamma. And I want to compactify X. So the Borel-Serre compactification, X bar, will be the quotient under gamma of a partial compactification, D bar Borel-Serre. And D bar Borel-Serre is obtained from D by adjoining what are called rational boundary components, just as in the case of the Bailey-Borel, but these are not the Bailey-Borel boundary components, they're rational Borel-Serre boundary components, plus Satake topology. So what are these boundary components? There's going to be one boundary component for each rational parabolic subgroup. One boundary component for each P rational parabolic. In the case of the Bailey-Borel compactification, we had one boundary component for each maximal parabolic subgroup. Now we have one boundary component for every parabolic subgroup. There's more boundary components. And here's how it's defined. You write P equals UP times LP, unipotent radical times the Levy. The LP is reductive, and so LP can be written as AP cross 0 LP, just as I did at the beginning with G. This is actually a product. And so this is sometimes called NP. It's again a rationally defined algebraic group. And I mean real points here. I'm going to leave out all the R's. So this is UP, AP, MP, and this is called Langlands decomposition. And it's actually, it's a semi-direct product. I don't remember which way this goes. It's a semi-direct product. U is normal. I think it's right. Yeah, U is normal. But there's no intersection between these pieces. Also, the maximal compact subgroup K has the property that when I intersect it with P, it's completely contained inside MP. Well, there's a point here which is a little messy, which I'm not explaining very carefully. LP is actually a quotient under P, but that you obtain by dividing by the unipotent radical. But it turns out that once you've chosen a K, there's a canonical lift. Of course, there are many lifts. Since this is a semi-direct product, there are many lifts of LP into P, all obtained by conjugating by U. But it turns out there's a canonical lift given the choice of K. And once you've made that canonical lift, K intersect P is contained inside MP. So P mod K is UP AP MP mod KP. Let's say it's diffeomorphic to this product. Now P acts transitively on the symmetric space. So this is D also. Let's say KP is K intersect P. Because of the Iwasawa decomposition, P acts transitively on the symmetric space, so we can write the symmetric space as P mod KP. And now the group A acts on D from the right. I mean, it also acts from the left. A, you know, D is G mod K, and so any subgroup acts from the left. But A also acts from the right. Namely, G KP times A equals G A KP for all G and G, all G and P. Why is this well defined? Well, I can change G by multiplying by an element of KP. So G K KP dot A is G K A KP. But K is contained inside M, and A is the center of the levy, so A commutes with M, so A commutes with this little K. So this is G A K KP, which is G A K. So there's a well-defined action from the right, which is called the geodesic action of Borel and Serre. In the upper half plane, it's an easy exercise. X plus IY dot with A 0 0 A inverse equals X plus I A squared Y. So the A axiom is moves things along vertical lines like that. The geodesic action moves things along vertical lines. And then the definition is the boundary component, the Borel-Serre boundary component corresponding to P is EP equals D divided by the geodesic action of AP is, you know, D divided by the geodesic action of AP. And we glue this to D by realizing EP as the limit of these geodesics. So in the case of the upper half plane, the quotient of the upper half plane by this action is a line, just like the x-axis. But we glue it at infinity like that. And so we get a strip. Sorry, I didn't hear you. The problem is at zero, there's going to be all these. The way the parabolic group acts, it acts very simply at infinity. It acts just by translating in the direction of along parallel to the x-axis. But the way it acts near zero is much more complicated. It moves points around in a much more complicated way. So you definitely have to glue it at infinity in order to get this to work. So I haven't said what. I'm about to say that. Yeah. So now this tells you how to glue one boundary component to D at infinity, and now you want to do this for every rational parabolic subgroup. And plus, there's a topology near infinity which consists of these open neighborhoods of infinity in the upper half plane, and you have to move those open sets around also by the group in order to get neighborhoods of these different boundary components. But let me just discuss the case of the upper half plane first. So now we do the same in the case of the upper half plane for all rational parabolic subgroups. So now it gets very hard to see what's going on, because remember that a rational translate of the point at infinity is some rational point here on the real line, and now we're going to add to that a whole real line at that point and a bunch of neighborhoods of it too. So it becomes very difficult to picture, but for each rational point there's going to be a neighborhood which looks like this at infinity. So the result is that the upper half plane union with a set of all rational boundary components. And the Satake topology, which you get by taking this topology near infinity and translating it to all these rational boundary components, is what we call H-bar Borel-Serre. What happens when you divide by gamma? So what happened before was we added points to each of these cusps after dividing by gamma. But now you can see what's going to happen. When I divide by gamma, the parabolic group acts near infinity just by translating. And so this line I've added at infinity is going to get turned into a circle. And so the result is going to be a compactification that doesn't have cusps, but it has little circles. And so it's a manifold with boundary. So X bar Borel-Serre, which is gamma into H bar Borel-Serre, is a manifold with boundary. Sorry? I still can't hear you. The issue hasn't come up yet. The only reason I did is because I'm going to have to write coordinates for AP, and I'll use simple roots. I'll have to use AP modulo AG. I mean, it's just a notation, just a simplified notation. But the problem hasn't come up yet. That's right. Sure, that's right. Yeah. The problem hasn't. It's not a big problem. It's just going to simplify the notation. So the general construction is the following. For each rational parabolic subgroup, Let delta P be the restrictions of the rational roots. So how to say? So let's pick P0 to be a minimal rational parabolic subgroup. The parabolics that contain P0 are called standard. Let P be a standard rational parabolic subgroup. Then we have the roots of G in AP0. And again, I want to use just the rational roots. And then delta P is the restrictions of these roots to AP. And so the elements of delta P give you a basis for the dual space to the Lie algebra of AP. So the elements of delta P gives a mapping of AP isomorphic to 0 infinity to the R, where R is the dimension of AP. Let's say if we order these, say alpha 1, alpha 2, up to alpha R, then we take T goes to alpha 1 of T up to alpha R of T. Now this space has a compactification obtained by adding infinity to each coordinate line. So we get a compactification AP bar, which is 0 infinity to the R, where I've added the point of infinity in each axis. Then Borel and Serre define D of P to be D crossed over AP by the geodesic action with AP bar. So this, if you think about it, this is exactly gluing the geodesic orbits onto D, because it says take the geodesic, each geodesic orbit is an orbit of the AP action on D, but AP acts on itself almost transitively, except for the stuff that we've added at infinity. So this identifies each geodesic orbit of AP inside D with the same piece inside AP, but it glues the end on as well. So this exactly glues the that's exactly what I was saying. It glues the it glues the Borel. I guess the easiest way to say this is this is fibers over D mod AP, which is EP, and the fiber is AP bar. So we have a picture that, so this glues EP onto D as limits of these geodesics. And I want this to be I want to declare this to be an open subset of the partial compactification. If P is contained inside Q, then AQ is contained inside AP. But in fact, you can put AQ into AP bar by putting AQ at infinity as a coordinate subspace. So again, how to say this? P is contained inside Q, then delta P can be written as delta Q unioned with some other set J. Let J be the complement of delta Q and delta P. Then AP maps to 0 infinity to the R by T goes to alpha 1 of T, alpha R of T. AQ is given by certain of these guys being equal to 1, namely the alphas that are in the subset J. So AQ corresponds to some 1s in various places, namely when the alpha is in J. And instead of leaving it inside AP, I want to put it inside AP bar by changing those 1s to infinities. So replace the ones by infinities. And that puts AQ inside this compactification, AP bar, as a coordinate subspace. And so then if you think about it, it also puts the D, so this puts D of Q, puts AQ, okay. Yeah, it also puts D of Q into D of P. So when you're finished, you get a picture that looks something like this. This is, to try to explain this in 5 minutes, it's probably coming out a mess. But I'll just tell you what it looks like when you're finished. You'll get one piece for EP, another piece for EQ, when P is contained inside Q. Another piece for EQ prime, when P is contained inside Q prime. D is out here, and these pieces, these boundary components, have been added as limits of geodesics that go off to infinity. So the EQ is added to D as the limits of the geodesics by the AQ action. The EQ prime was added to D as the limits of the AQ prime action. And the P got added to D by, now AP is now two-dimensional, and so there's whole two-dimensional sets of geodesics. There are two-dimensional flat geodesic subspaces that get collapsed to glue EP onto D. This region D of P is EP together with D and all the EQs where P is contained inside Q. So D of P equals EP union with all the EQs such that Q contains P. So it's a huge open subset, including the whole symmetric space. And the EQ is the same thing, but it doesn't contain this line. D of Q is EQ union with the set of all, in this case it's just set of all ER such that R contains Q. In this picture, Q is a maximal parabolic subspace. Q is a maximal rational parabolic subgroup. So this D of Q would be EQ together with the interior D. What I'm trying to say is that once you've added all these boundary components, they fit together also in a way that's compatible with the inclusions of parabolics. In the case of the upper half plane, there's only one parabolic to worry about, so I didn't have to worry about boundaries of boundaries. But they all fit together. D bar, or else there, is D union with all of these rational boundary components and a topology, the Sasaki topology, in which each D of P is an open set. So we have all these open sets glued to, we have all these boundary components glued to D with these open sets added to the closure, which is what the Sasaki topology is. And then the theorem is that X bar, bar else there, which is the quotient under gamma, is compact. And once again, gamma does two things when it acts. It glues boundary components together, and it makes identifications within a single boundary component. So gamma identifies boundary components In fact, it identifies them. DEP with EP prime whenever P and P prime are gamma conjugate. And it makes identifications. Within a single boundary component, so EP becomes a stratum, which I'll call YP stratum in X bar Borel's there. So the claim is that this compactification is in fact a manifold with boundary, even though we've added all this stuff. And for that, I have to say a few words about parabolic neighborhoods. So, fact, for every rational parabolic subgroup, P, there exists a neighborhood, VP, of EP in D bar Borel Serre, so that X and Y are identified, so X and Y in this neighborhood, VP, are identified under gamma if and only if X and Y are identified under gamma P, which is gamma intersect P. So this is the reason that we had to put the boundary components at infinity. At infinity, near a point on the boundary, the way the identifications work is that two points near a boundary component get identified under gamma if and only if they get identified under gamma intersect P. And so the whole structure near one of these boundary components can be determined by dividing by gamma P instead of dividing by gamma. Gamma P has a much simpler structure. In the upper half plane, it just acts by translations along the x direction. So this says that a neighborhood of infinity, in the case of the upper half plane, can be understood just by looking at these translations rather than the whole action of gamma. There's another way to say this. So such a neighborhood will be called a gamma parabolic. Such a neighborhood is called a parabolic neighborhood, or a gamma parabolic neighborhood. There's another way to say this. D bar Borel Serre divided by gamma maps to D bar Borel Serre, divided by gamma P maps to D bar Borel Serre divided by gamma. Gamma intersect P is a subgroup of gamma, so this quotient is a covering of this quotient. This quotient is the space we want. This fact says that when you're close to one of these boundary components, this covering is 1-to-1. And so a neighborhood of one of these boundary components in this space is the same as the neighborhood of the boundary component in this space. And so we can study this space if we want to understand this, the local structure near a boundary component. So this is 1-to-1 near EP log gamma P. Well, we had this neighborhood D of P. Which was basically a product of D mod AP cross AP bar. And it's hard to see how gamma acts, but it's not so hard to see how gamma p acts on this. Gamma p is going to act trivially on this factor, and it's just going to divide this factor by gamma intersect p. So gamma p acts. So this is ep cross ap bar. Gamma p acts just on the ep factor. So that means that after dividing by gamma, I'll still have this product neighborhood. Still get a product neighborhood. Ep my gamma p cross ap bar near the stratum xp. So I get a similar picture here after dividing by gamma, but now there'll be an xp here, an xq here, an xq prime here. And now instead of these being all of d mod gamma, this will be a neighborhood of this stratum in d mod gamma. So we get a neighborhood which still has this local product structure. So xp has a neighborhood which is a corner if you like. You can think of crossing this with a line, because xp is coming out of the board and these other strata are also manifolds that are coming out of the board, and then this gives a product neighborhood which is still a manifold with boundary, but the boundary's got kinks in it, which is a corner. So people say it's a manifold with corners. You can develop the whole theory of manifolds with boundaries to allow for corners as well. And so the result is that X bar, or else there, is a manifold with corners. Topologically, it's a manifold with boundary, but the boundary has got kinks in it. So there's, in some sense, a way to make sense of this is a smooth manifold with corners. On the other hand, the structure of the stratum XP is a bit of a mess, because what is EP? What I'd like to say that I'd like to say that if I take a stratum in the Borel-Serre compactification, I'm sorry, I've been calling these XPs, but I think I called it YP earlier. This is going to get really messy if I don't change these all to YPs. Okay. A stratum YP of D bar Borel-Serre, it has a closure in D bar Borel-Serre. I'd like to say that the closure of YP is the Borel-Serre compactification of YP. The problem is YP is not the orbit of a is not a locally symmetric space for a reductive group. What is YP? We took P mod KP AP. That's how we got EP, and then we divided by gamma P. So this is UP AP MP mod KP AP mod gamma P. So this is UP MP mod KP mod gamma P. So this is not a reductive group. It has a big unipotent radical. And so in order to actually make sense of this statement, you have to discuss Borel-Serre compactifications of non-reductive groups, groups that have unipotent radicals. So if you read Borel-Serre's paper, they start off in this enormous generality about taking an arbitrary algebraic group and constructing these Borel-Serre compactifications. And they're always worrying about the unipotent radical and so on. And it's just impossible to read. So So they do that in order to use inductions on the boundary components. But nevertheless, we can get some idea of what the boundary stratum is going to look like after dividing by gamma. This is not a direct product. It's a semi-direct product. The UP is normal. So this gamma P can be projected into the levy. And so we do have a quotient MP mod KP mod gamma M. So we have gamma intersected with P. We project this to the levy, LP. And this breaks up into AP times MP. And when you've projected the intersection of gamma with intersect P into the levy, the result is completely contained inside here, gamma M. So we do have this quotient, which is and M is a reductive group. On the other hand, UP also gets divided by the part of gamma that acts on U, which is gamma intersect U. And so it turns out then that this is a fiber bundle over MP mod KP mod gamma P. And the fiber is UP modulo gamma intersect UP. UP is a unipotent radical. Gamma is a lattice inside UP. And these quotients of this type are always compact. This is called a compact null manifold. So the structure of EP is rather complicated. It's a fiber bundle over a nice locally symmetric space for a reductive group, namely this, but the fiber is a compact nil manifold. And so there's a way to avoid all these horrible inductions. I mean, whenever you try to do something with one of these spaces, you have to look at the boundary strata and the boundaries of boundaries and so on. And if you do anything with the Borel-Serre compactification, you're immediately led into these non-reductive groups, which are just horrible to work with. But there is another compactification which doesn't have the UP. We just collapse all these compact nil manifolds to points and replace the stratum XP with this thing. Replace the stratum YP with this thing. So there's another compactification called the reductive Borel-Serre compactification. X bar reductive Borel-Serre is obtained from X bar Borel-Serre by collapsing these nil manifold fibers to points. Or, if you like, X bar reductive Borel-Serre is equal to, or if you like, it's the quotient under gamma of a compactification D bar reductive Borel-Serre, where D bar reductive Borel-Serre is D unioned with the following objects for each parabolic, let's call it DP, which is MP mod KP AP for each rational parabolic. P equals UP AP MP. So what did I do in the Borel-Serre compactification? I acted by the geodesic action of AP and divided by that, and I got the Borel-Serre boundary stratum, boundary component, which is basically UP times M. And now I'm also throwing away the UP and just dividing by the MP and KP. So this is the geodesic action divided by a maximal compact subgroup of M. And so we add a locally symmetric space for reductive group at the boundary. Pardon me? I'm going to try to draw a picture. Unfortunately, in the upper half plane, it just adds points again. It just adds the cusp, so you can't really see it in the upper half plane. Except I'm running out of time. So let me just say we have D bar Borel sphere maps to D bar reductive Borel sphere maps to X bar reductive Borel sphere, X bar Borel sphere. Inside each of these, we have boundary components and boundary strata. EP goes to DP, goes to YP, goes to XP. This is a fiber bundle after dividing by gamma, this is a fiber bundle whose fiber, now here we're dividing by gamma, whose fiber is a compact nil manifold. So tomorrow, I'll try to say a few more words about the reductive Borel sphere compactification, maybe try to draw a picture, and then I'll try to talk about cohomology and the Zucker conjecture, and how all these different compactifications support different cohomology theories.